Welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free call-in number for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, followed by the number 8. Or, if you're currently, recently, or about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Our politicians spend so little time talking about homelessness and poverty that you might think there's not much to discuss. But every year on the Homelessness Marathon, we're amazed at how many topics we never get to and how many topics we never thought of that other people bring up. That's why we want you to tell us what you think is important in an open mic hour right after this.
I'm speaking with Ginger Ferguson, who is the executive director of the Coalition for the Hungry and Homeless of Brevard County in Florida on the East Coast near Cape Canaveral. Ginger, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you, Jeremy.
We understand that you were hit there by 3 out of the 4 hurricanes which struck Florida. This must have had some impact on the housing situation there. You must have a lot of houses that were affected. What was the result?
Oh, we had many, many homes that were destroyed. A lot of low-income mobile home situations that were totally devastated. We had a lot of actually high-income homes that were on the coast that also received major windstorm damages. In the south end of the county, it was much worse than it was in the north end, but yeah, we all had some devastation, some damage. There was a lot of people that were left homeless.
Okay, well, let me ask you the $64 question. Did the government on any level respond to this? How well did it respond, and did the rich get treated the same way as the poor?
Well, we did have a response from FEMA. They did send out quite a few people into the community looking at the devastation. They did set up some FEMA assistance programs, locations where people could go in and apply for FEMA assistance or for loans, Small Business Administration loans. So we did have quite a good response. We also did have the Salvation Army and the Red Cross set up assistance centers in several locations throughout the county. Our county is 72 miles long. It's narrow, but it's a very long county. So they had several sites set up for people for emergency assistance. The problem was that a lot of the homes and the insurance claims are just now starting to get some assistance. A lot of the people did not get their insurance claims in a timely manner, and we're having a huge problem with, of course, finding contractors and roofing contractors and having the money from the insurance claims to actually get the work accomplished. So a lot of the houses, especially rental homes, are still left without having any renovations done. So a lot of people are still out of their homes.
This did not apply to the rich people because they can just finance it out of pocket if they need repairs, I assume. So this is not affecting them.
Well, yeah, even some of them have had to stay in motels now. This happened August and September, so even wealthy people that are overextended can find that they can get themselves in a financial crisis.
But you're saying there are people, poorer people, actually sleeping in homeless shelters now because the insurance hasn't come through on their houses?
Our problem is we have no homeless shelters here.
Mm-hmm.
We have no homeless shelter space. Everything is always occupied. We have approximately over 2,100 on any given night that are homeless, and we have maybe 400 total shelter spaces, including transitional housing. So we have no place for people to stay. There's people staying in parks, in the woods, encampments, anywhere that they can find, doubling up on couches with family members, or they've exhausted most of their finances in motels, so a lot of them are totally homeless now.
Now, these are people whose only crime was they were sitting in a house that got hit by a hurricane, and some of them just didn't have insurance that paid off quick enough. Even some of them are in the parks.
Even some of them are in the parks. Even homeowners are having really difficult situations right now. But the renters, and especially those that were cost-burdened, paying more than 50% of their income for rentals, are extremely vulnerable now, or homeless.
Well, we've only got a few seconds left, but how would you rate Jeb Bush's leadership towards addressing the needs of these people?
Well, I think it could have been a little better. I think we could have done a lot more, and I think addressing the issue of homelessness on a day-to-day basis is severely lacking from our government. If we had emergency shelters in place, if we had affordable housing, if we had subsidized housing, if we had more Section 8 vouchers instead of less Section 8 vouchers, we wouldn't have this crisis that we're having right now because of a natural hurricane situation.
Ginger Ferguson, Brevard County Coalition for the Hungry and Homeless, thank you very much for being my guest on the marathon.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Nobody, and welcome back to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, where the numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody and the number 8. Anybody can call that. Homeless, housed, anyone, 877-NOBODY-8. Or we have an extra line for those of you who are homeless, formerly homeless, or who are afraid you're about to be homeless, and you can call in at 866-LEFT-OUT, 866-LEFT-OUT. This is our totally open mic hour, and fortunately, we've got callers, we've got somebody standing at the mic in the booth, so I'll try and get everybody in as quickly as I can and hear what they have to say. But let us start with Margo from Santa Cruz on the phone. Margo, are you there? Do we have Margo from Santa Cruz?
Yes. I've been homeless twice, 1998 and in 2001. And, you know, in Santa Cruz, they are pretty organized here where they are preparing a lot to help homelessness because people have advocated a lot on the street for it. And I can see that they're really providing, right now I see they are starting to provide a lot of family emergency housing. And they have a satellite program where a lot of churches get together and really help provide housing and food, which is really, really good compared to where it had been because, you know, we're in a town where University of Santa Cruz, when people come here to school, they can pay more for rent. So it's pushed a lot of people out that have families to have an opportunity to get a good rental. So that, you know, that was a problem we were dealing with, and we still have that problem, too. Because the students can afford to pay $600 a room, so you figure if they're paying $1,800 for a house, mm-hmm. how can someone who has a family afford to pay $1,800 for rent?
This is a problem all over the country. We did a marathon from Cambridge where you talk, $1,800 was the figure for a two-bedroom. I was staying in a modest two-bedroom where I was crashing on the floor to do the broadcast, and that's what those people, for a two-bedroom. Which is even more expensive. That's one of the most expensive housing markets in the country, $1,800. And you got to ask the question, if you're working for $5.15 an hour, what chance have you got?
Right. It's pretty difficult. I was going to suggest to everybody, I'm kind of getting involved, and if you have a mental health board and substance abuse, you know, in every county we have that, and the public is welcome to attend the meetings. You know, in California, Prop 63 just went through, and that's to help the mental health of the community, and that's actually to serve the community as a whole. So I suggest people start attending their board meetings and see how they can get involved, but by being there, you're going to learn how your community works, and I think it's a very valuable thing to do. Find out. I know the mental health boards meet once a month, and I suggest everybody go to attend one because if you notice how the pharmaceutical companies are trying to psychiatry and pharmaceuticals are tied into the system, and it's time that we got out and said, hey, we want to do alternative ways, and we want to start counseling and working with people instead of drugging them up. And I think that's a really serious crime to tell people to get off drugs and try our new drug and make the pharmaceuticals rich. I think it's a really serious problem, and we need to stop supporting the pipeline of the pharmaceuticals.
Well, you know, my wife and I were going to start a new peace movement. And PEACE was going to stand for Prozac for Every American Who Can't Eat. And it was going to be, the idea was, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, now I don't want to get into the whole debate about psychiatric drugs.
Yeah.
But certainly the idea that you're going to medicate people out of real world problems, like they can't afford food, that's not going to work. So there's got to be a limit to that approach. I certainly agree with you about that. Margo, before I let you go, can you tell us how you got out of homelessness?
What did I do? Let me see. Oh, I was fortunate where I had workman's comp, and I got a settlement for when I signed it off for my injury, they'd owed me for not paying vocational rehab, and I ended up getting over $20,000, and I ended up paying off my student loan so I could go back to school, and I was fortunate enough to go to my dream school, you know, which is, you know, to a really great school in San Francisco, California Institute of Integral Studies, where you can finish your BA in 1 year in a small cohort group, which mm-hmm. is, you know, I never had that experience before because I've always went to state schools. And let me see. So I finished that. I finished my BA, and then I went to University of Santa Cruz to learn to be a teacher. And that helped me get ahead.
Now,
but, you know,
I
if it wasn't for that, if I hadn't fought for my rights, you know, again, here we go. If you didn't fight for what you believed in and knowing the small print that you weren't getting what you deserved, you mm-hmm. really have to fight mm-hmm. for what you need.
But we must note here, and I mean, I congratulate you. You were a fighter. You fought for your rights. You got an education, and God bless you, and good for you. But we must go and look at this. This does confirm my wad of cash theory, because...
Oh, yeah. If I hadn't had that, then I may have been continued to be homeless.
Right.
Because what opportunity would I have unless I got a small, you know, a job that didn't pay enough money to survive.
There you go. Well, Margo, I want to thank you so much for calling into the Homelessness Marathon and sharing
and
that.
And don't forget, everybody, go to the Mental Health Board meetings in your area and check out Prop 63 for California, because it's here to cover everybody.
Okay. Thank you very much, Margo. At the microphone, we have...
Anthony Dixon.
Anthony. Anthony, and you are here to say what?
I'm here to recite a poem called Tears from Heaven.
Okay, let's hear it.
This poem right here I wrote because, and it, you know, fits the weather perfectly because it's raining right now. And, you know, when I think of the rain, I think of tears from heaven. And when it's raining outside, you don't see as many people outside. You know, when it's a sunny day, hot day, a lot of people outside, and a lot of people on the blocks, on the street corners, you know, doing up to no good, you know, doing what they do to survive. But, you know, when it's raining, you know, a lot of people go in the house, and, you know, a lot of accidents and violence doesn't take place because of the rain, because it prevents a lot of it, you know, from taking place. So I wrote this poem called Tears from Heaven, you know, dealing with the violence and stuff that goes on. Tears from heaven rain, fall from the sky. Better to fall from a cloud than fall from my eye. Rain fall down and cool off the tempers in town before these high overcrowded blocks are alarmed by the sounds of gunshots, leaving flocks of people stampeding, breathing hard and scared, not knowing if they are scarred or bleeding, from shock not really knowing what happened, because all of a sudden someone thugging started clapping, which left only a few things for a person to do in this situation. It's so sad but true, to either duck or run before a bullet hits you, along with praying and hoping to make it out of this predicament. Lord, I just want you to know that I'm so, so sick of it. So tears from heaven, sins a blessing, and please get rid of it. Before once again, the ignorance begins, leaving a permanent impression of the demented. Before once again, the ignorance begins, leaving a permanent impression of the demented imprinted in the minds of the innocent. Where the two questions lie, why and who did it? Maybe one reason, but no excuse to grab your gun and shoot. It is the hottest season of summer when the heat waves are blazing, sending angers raging, leaving attitudes ruled from hunger, causing a crime rate to steadily rise with the temperature. Contagiously spreading to brothers and sisters in underground fever. So tears from heaven pour on the poor so that tempers won't soar and lead to an uproar. Whether bully or wimp, poor or pimp, you are not exempt, no matter if you are rich or poor. Because when it's hot outside, the lions and lionesses of the African pride in baggy jeans and tight dresses might be preying on your hide. By any means to survive, I'm staying alive without the need of any job. Turkeys that eventually get slain for Thanksgiving dinner, for I'm a winner and more than worthy. And only thankful to God for life's blessing, and also his loving that is as sweet as Hershey's. Kisses, I reminisce on many years of doing the dishes and taking the time to see the cleanliness of my mind and the reflection of my face on my plate before I ate. God's grace and God's good food that I had to taste. Without haste, I wait and thank great God Almighty, for he is the one who chose to create and not forsake me. So God, rain down your tears from heaven that you send as a blessing. Make it rain to prevent this pain and wash all of that ignorance down the drain.
Hey, that's thank good. You. Thank you very much, Anthony. By the way, on the subject of turkeys, every year we have a national ceremony, really odd in the United States. There is a national ceremony where the president pardons the national turkey. I'm not making this up. You may have seen it on the news. They get Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and stuff around them, and there's a big fancy white turkey there, which they pardon, and they ship it out every year to a wild animal park or some kind of animal sanctuary, and it's a little ceremony. We're not going to kill the turkey, and then they go into the White House and eat turkey. And I think, to me, that's kind of symbolic of some of the social programs we got. You know, as much help as some of them are, it's like the pardoned turkey. And then they go around and they are doing all kinds of things with the budget and everything else that is just destroying the lives of a lot of people. Let me remind you that if you want to see what's going on here, you can get on the webcam by going to www.homelessnessmarathon.org. If you'd been watching a little earlier, you would have seen that Kerry, who was doing such a good job guest hosting, as did Pat before, and Rogi also, was a big gust of wind, the kind you wouldn't want if you were in a little shanty and you were homeless out in this weather tonight. And the gust of wind was so strong and out of nowhere, it basically knocked the Tabernacle of Truth, our broadcast booth, over. And Kerry was great. He was on the phone, on the microphone, while holding down the thing to keep it from toppling over completely. And if you had been watching, you might have seen that, except I think it blew over the camera as well. All right, we got people on the line. We got people in the booth. Those numbers, again, are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And we have Debbie on the line. I'm not sure where Debbie is from, but Debbie, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hey, I'm from Tucson.
Debbie from Tucson. Welcome, Debbie.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm all right. I got a few random things I wanted to mention. One might sound kind of trivial, but you know, you're always hearing people talk about, oh, all this drug abuse and drinking out there on the streets. But I sure do know a lot of people who live indoors who drink and abuse drugs. So that doesn't seem to me to be the reason why people are on the streets.
I couldn't agree with you more. I don't consider that a trivial point at all.
People just seem to overlook that one, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the money that's missing, or the support system, not the fact that people do drugs. But at any rate, another thing I wanted to say is I haven't heard a whole lot of talk about people on, or maybe I fell asleep at that time, but people who are on Social Security, SSI and whatnot.
Yeah.
Have you had much conversation about that?
We had a little, yes, we did, but go ahead.
Well, it's just, it's a trap, you know. I mean, if you get off of it, I've been on it off and on for 12 years and tried real hard to get off because I hate myself when I'm on it. But then I get off of it and try to work and end up getting ill again and having to go back on it for, you know, mental stuff. And each time you get off of it, it becomes increasingly difficult to get back on it. But like here in Tucson, I'm getting $520. My rent's $485.
I was going to ask you how much you get. $520. Does the state supplement?
No.
That's all federal $520.
That's it. Yeah.
You're actually at the high end of the food chain there, because the average for SSI is $435.
Is it really?
Yeah.
See, I figured because we're like last on everything in Arizona, so I thought maybe there was a better state to be disabled in, but maybe not.
there may be. There are states that supplement. You may be getting a supplement, and you may not be realizing it because
I don't know. What I know is that, you know, when you go in for help and you say, God, I got to get back to work, and they're like, oh, no, you don't want to give up your Social Security because that's your safety net, but it feels like a real trap because you end up you trade in mental health of one kind for mental problems of another, because when you can't even buy clothing or food or, you know, anything, it's like every penny you have is going just to keep a roof over your head. And that's why periodically I end up living outside in the car, because I don't want to spend every penny I have on housing.
But see, Debbie, this is where I disagree with you.
Why?
Because
why?
I do think that homelessness is caused by mental illness. I think it's caused...
What was that?
I do believe that homelessness is caused by mental illness. It's the mental illness of our legislators who think that anybody can live on $520
well,
a month.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can't, but yeah, no, I agree. You can't live off of that. And you get crazier trying to do it. You're just chasing your tail or hitting your head against the wall.
Yeah, and while I'm sounding off, I want to say I also think it's caused by addiction. It's caused by the addiction our politicians have to money from the fat cats.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, so these are the true causes of homelessness, but not the way people think.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
You're getting that $520 and your rent is $500, $495.
My rent's $485.
$485, okay.
And then I got to pay utilities on top of that. So I go out here and do a few things under the table, but don't tell anyone.
Oh, sure. It's not like we're not on 90 radio stations.
Yeah,
I won't say a word.
But it still doesn't cut it. And but
you're saying that the government is forcing you into a life of crime, basically.
Yeah, they make you lie. They make you lie to pay your gas bill. And then another thing I wanted to hit off of was that one woman way back, you know, a few hours back, she was talking about how she had a job and she had money, but she was going to be evicted because of her credit. On one occasion when I was homeless, I was trying to move back indoors, and I did have a fistful of money. I mean, it was not a lot, but a fistful for me. And I couldn't get anyone to rent to me because of my poor credit and because I had been homeless and you know, my job history is rocky. So, you know, there's so much to it, man. It's tough.
So you don't think it can all be summed up just by a sentence or two, huh? Like we hear from our we're doing the best we can, or they're all drunks or something. That doesn't cut it really for you.
No, I don't think so. No, it's all of that. It's all of that and a whole lot more.
All right, well.
So anyways, but I appreciate the show. I listened last year, too, and if you guys keep doing that, I plan on keep listening.
Well, we want to keep doing it. The only thing, do you think there's any chance the whole problem will be solved before we get to the next show?
Do I think that all of our problems will be solved before the next show?
Yeah, there'll be no more homelessness.
Oh, hell no.
Okay, well, then we might do it again.
Okay,
thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
At the microphone, I have...
My name's Edward Lopez, nobody.
Okay, welcome, Edward. What is on your mind?
Well, I'm 51 years old. I've been homeless for a couple of years now. I'm a computer technician. The problem is... there was a little thing called the internet bubble burst a couple of years ago, and fun stuff like that. But anyway, I belong to a couple of organizations here in New Haven. One of them is Respect Line. That's out of Yale University.
I have heard of that, yes, and I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, they're a great bunch of people. The other one is called Inside at Night. And at Inside at Night, we have tried for the past several years to keep the overflow shelter open during the summer months. Normally, the overflow shelter is only open during the winter. During the summer, everybody is out to do whatever they can, and that ain't too good. So anyway, in the past 2 years, we have raised over $150,000 to keep the overflow open during the summer. And
Edward, you've raised $150,000?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Could I talk to you after the show? You're looking awful good to me all of a sudden, you know? Never mind. We're just a little show struggling to survive here. But go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You raised a lot of money, and good for you, by the way. But go on. And what are you doing with it?
Yeah.
To keep the shelter open? And people will ask, why do you need a shelter in the summer? Isn't New Haven a summer paradise?
It's pretty pleasant, actually. I have had occasion to sleep on the park benches once in a while. And you know what? The park benches on the green are awesome. I slept like a freaking log. It was wonderful. Okay? Then again, it isn't something you want to do every single day. I got eaten alive by the mosquitoes. Dumb stuff. You get little infections and...
Okay, so you've convinced me. I'm a bleeding heart. You need a shelter. All right.
You need housing.
You need housing. But what the heck? A shelter we'll start there.
Yeah. Well, getting back to Respect Line, They operate out of the Dwight Hall Center for Social Justice at Yale University, and they're one of several organizations. Another one of them is called YHAP.
Now, just a second. Do the Yale students participate in this?
Yes, they did.
Because I've heard, well, at least one person has told me that the Yale students are completely clueless when it comes to what's going on around here. They're into big causes, national causes, not things going on in New Haven. That's not true from your point of view.
Well, as with all things, to some people it's a priority, to other people it isn't. Some of these kids, yes, came from the lap of privilege, and they didn't know homeless existed, okay? Other people, one of the most extraordinary people, in fact, he came from California, and he dealt with migrant workers all the time, and he thought they were the coolest. And he was one of the best friends we had. A few years ago, we set up a tent city on the New Haven Green. He's the one that got us the tents.
Uh-huh.
Actually, he hijacked them from his work, which his boss didn't like at all.
Okay, well, we're not going to go into that because somebody might find out.
Oh, they already know.
Okay.
But anyway, getting back to YHAP, we had an activity here last year, and I'd like to talk about that a little.
Okay, I got to wrap this up, so let's get to the point of what YHAP is and why we're talking about YHAP.
Okay, YHAP, that stands for the Yale Hunger and Homelessness Project, and it simply is a bunch of student activists who try to see what they can do, what Yale can do, to help the homeless out there.
But wait a minute. All right, look, I mean, I don't want to make this, draw this out, but now I know we're treading on sensitive ground. Maybe the Yale students are right, but I don't believe that Yale University is all right. Everything I've heard about the universities in this country, including Yale, is they're buying up the poor neighborhoods so they can expand. They're pushing poor people out. And the universities are, without a shadow of a doubt, creators of homelessness, no matter how much they try to paper it over with their supposed good works. Do you have any argument with that?
Well, let's put it this way. If Yale University were Darth Vader, YHAP would be Luke Skywalker. I mean, he is the guy's son, but he is an okay guy.
But you're not here to defend Yale, in other words.
Not really.
Okay, that's fair enough. But there are good people there, which we never doubted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One of the things YHAP tries to do is create an open forum, okay, bring in people to increase the awareness of the problems, what can be done about it. And one of the things they did is, close to a year ago, they invited Professor Dennis Culhane of the University of Pennsylvania.
Who will be on the show later.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I haven't spoken to him since last year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he is a nationally recognized authority on homelessness, and he was invited here by the people of YHAP out of Dwight Hall, the Center for Social Justice at Yale University. In passing, I'd like to mention that conference was carried out at First and Summerfield United Methodist Church, of which I am a member. The pastor there is Reverend Ron Rising, and you will never meet a nicer bunch of people.
Okay.
Anyway, Professor Culhane and his team, they've been gathering statistical data on homelessness nationwide for the past 20 years or so, and certain national trends have emerged. He classifies the homeless in three main groups. The casual homeless, who only go into the shelters for 2 or 3 days. Typical case is the person whose house catches fire. Well, it'll take about a week for
him to... Listen, we got
to
move this on because I got a lot of people on the line, and Dennis is going to be on, so...
Yeah. Okay. That,
But, you know, you've really contributed a piece. Why don't we leave it at this? I loved your analogy. If Yale is like Darth Vader... There are people at Yale who are like Luke Skywalker. They're the son, but not quite related in a normal way.
Yeah, in a way, the Dwight Hall Center for Social Justice, they're a bit of a wild card. They're not owned by Yale. They were bequeathed by Timothy Dwight's estate.
All right, all right. Listen, Edward, I want to thank you very much for sharing that, for restoring my faith in the people of Yale University. And I want to thank you very much for sharing on the marathon, and I'd be happy to talk to you longer, but I got people stacked up, and I want to get to them. So thank you very much.
Okay, nobody.
Pleasure talking to you. All right, we've got two Davids on the line. Those numbers, by the way, are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And the first David is from Santa Fe. David from Santa Fe, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening to you, sir. What's on your mind?
All kinds of things. I'd like to defend Yale University for a moment, if I may. Kelly Brownell, director of Yale University Center for Eating Disorders, latest book, Food Fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only good thing that I know about Yale University. The bad thing I know about it is Skull and Bones, I believe.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, Yale University, I'm glad you said that, because they were just quaking in their boots that I ever said anything about
them. They need to, okay? And a lot of other people. The reason I mentioned Kelly Brownell is because what we've been talking about, what I've been hearing about tonight on the phone is the problem, okay? And what I'm involved here with in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is economic development. And I'm not going to go into it very deeply. However, I believe that other solutions need to be looked for, okay, and not look directly at the problem. It's an energy flow thing, okay? I'm 34 years old.
Okay.
And my first experience with homelessness was when I was 18 years old in Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama. And it was a result of my behavior, drug and alcohol problems. I finally made peace with that, and through 12-step programs, you know, was able to find a creator of my own understanding that I could do business with, that motivated me. Now, I'm potentially in the realm of all possibilities. I may be homeless here in whenever. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I rely each day on my creator to lead me to the direction of money. And the problem is of color, and that is green, okay? And there's a wonderful book by Robert Egger from Washington, D.C., D.C. Central Kitchen. It's called Begging for Change. If anybody wants to make a difference in this country, in this world, they need to buy that book, okay? I'm going to tell you something right now, and that is that you know, the shift is occurring in this country. Okay, the shift is occurring. People are becoming more and more aware of what the problem is, and that's the disparity between the haves and the have-nots. Now, the University of New Mexico has done a study, okay, through the Bureau of Business and Economic Research Department. Wonderful. What they have found in Santa Fe,
okay,
is that wages in Santa Fe are 20% lower than the national average, but the median value of owner-occupied housing is 53% higher than the national level.
Now, just a minute. That is because Santa Fe is a rich person's playground in a lot of
states. Sir, I beg to challenge your statement. It is not a rich person's playground necessarily. Okay,
no, I don't mean for everybody.
I live here, and I'm poor. Let me finish
my
statement.
Wait. Let me ask you.
Please,
I want to get
please,
this.
Please,
No. I want to ask you this. What is driving? I mean, when I ask that, I mean, isn't Santa Fe a community where rich people have second houses and things, and that drives up the market? I'm not saying everybody's rich there, but what is driving up the market then if it's not wages?
You are correct.
Thank
you. It is the playground of the wealthy, okay? Right. However, I'm saying wages in Santa Fe are 20% lower than the national average, while the owner-occupied housing is 53% higher, okay? The value of housing units are increasing at nearly three times the national rate. Now, what this is doing is it's forcing people to move outside of Santa Fe. Okay, who live here, the artists. This was a study done for the arts and cultural industries in Santa Fe County. Now, what we're doing is we're working with building affordable housing here in Santa Fe, okay? We want to subsidize it with nonprofits, and we want the artists to help us do this, okay? You talk about duality. You know, I could possibly be facing homelessness very quickly. At the same time, I've been granted a very minimal stipend by the largest charitable foundation here in Santa Fe, you know, a very minimal amount, okay, to do something. Now, I own two vehicles, neither of which are running. However, I'm going to have a competition between these two vehicles, and I'm going to auction them off to the highest bidder. 75% of the proceeds will go to a local nonprofit teen center here for artists, okay, 21 and under. And then the remaining 25% is going to go into the nonprofit that I'm creating to begin addressing this problem. I want to tell you something. I've been eating at the Salvation Army for the past two or three days,
okay,
talking to people there and listening and gathering information and addressing needs. I heard tonight that these guys are sleeping on the floor in the Salvation Army without any padding under them, okay? That makes me very sad. and very emotional.
Me too.
So
okay.
Now I've challenged myself to find them some pads to sleep on, okay? Donate some pads. I mean, it's people like myself, my friends, that we have to get involved, you know? I mean, I'm sorry. How many of the homeless people voted, okay? You know, we have to organize in this country, okay? We have to organize. Votes do matter. Okay, and people have to bond together, regardless of race, sex, color, creed, whatever. I mean, we have to overcome that. Okay, we have to overcome it. We have to assimilate and bring together mediators that can facilitate the communication process between classes, between races, whatever it is. You know, because I expect more out of people, and I give them more credit than maybe a lot of other people do. I think everybody has the potential for brilliance at some level. Okay, and some word that someone says may touch somebody's heart that releases something. We know so very little about the brain and the capacity for understanding, the capacity for enlightenment. I mean, we are in the stage of enlightenment in this country. It's happening. There's a shift taking place. I mean, look at the election, this past election. I mean, it was such a split. I mean, so many people voted. But, I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that there is a rise. Okay, Richard Florida calls it the rise of the creative class. It's a new class of people that are rising up that want to go to work dressed in their casual clothes. They're breaking away from the corporate structure. And the corporate structure is trying to catch up with this and profit from this. And they're not going to be able to do that because the power of the people, the consciousness of the people is so strong. I mean, listen to the homeless people you heard tonight.
No, I hear you.
Adding brilliant poetry.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to thank you for the call, and I'm going to say a few things on the air.
Thank you,
to
sir,
answer
so
you,
much
and thank
for your
you.
Time and your effort in what you're doing. It's so remarkable.
I appreciate it, and thank you for sharing with us. And I want to say, David, it was thinking like you have that is what got me doing this. You know, there's something about the disgraceful conditions that are going on in this country. You're motivated to sell a couple of cars to get people mats. I was in radio, so I was motivated to do something with a radio show. And I think you are absolutely right. I really believe, the tide is going to turn, the worm is going to turn, the pendulum is going to swing, something. But I do believe that things are going to change. There is a spirit growing in this country that is not really breaking through to the surface yet. It broke through a little at the Battle of Seattle, you know, but people aren't really seeing it so much. But it's there because there's a lot of people who are fed up with the way things are, who are motivated for change. So I really thank you, David, for the call. In the tower, I'll go to the tower next because we have somebody there with a cane who's been standing patiently, and that's Janet in the Tower of Testimony. Janet, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
I just want to thank you tonight for running the broadcast for the homeless situation. And it's good to hear that nobody cares, but it would be really nice to hear the voice of somebody's. A lot of those somebody's that get out and make these big broadcasts on TV and they ask for money to send across the waters to people that need it. What about us in here in the United States? You know, it would be so nice if we had a few presidents come and address the situation of the homelessness in the United States. It's sad because the classes are just being separated. Where's the middle class going? The middle class is being absorbed by the lower class.
Everybody is shifting down except for the ones at the top.
At the top.
And Janet, yeah. You may have missed this in the beginning. I did say in the first hour, and I'm glad to have an occasion to say it again. The White House was invited to participate. I'm not kidding myself that George Bush was going to come here. But when we were on one tiny station in our first year, the Clinton White House sent Andrew Cuomo's deputy at HUD to speak on this broadcast. Now, I didn't even like Clinton personally. I didn't think he was a very good president. That's my personal opinion. Never mind. But I have to say this. For a broadcast on one tiny station, they sent Andrew Cuomo's deputy. For 2 years, now we're on 80 last year, 90 stations this year. We've been approaching the Bush White House. Would they give us anyone to talk about the administration's policy? And not only have they not sent anyone, they have never even had the courtesy to acknowledge our requests. We have gotten nothing but the back of the hand from them. But I want people to know that we did make a good faith effort to invite these people to participate, and they really would not do it.
Well, that's precisely what I'm talking about. Everybody has all these solutions for the tsunamis and the hurricanes and all these things. Homelessness is the American tsunami. And we need to address this problem. You know, and I hear people talking about affordable housing, and that's where the whole thing is. Because I live in New Haven, and New Haven is, you know, every day you hear, oh, we're putting up 1,200 new units. But for whom? The common average person that is working cannot afford it. You're talking about Yale. I guess it's for those people that work for Yale. I guess it's for those students whose parents pay for these apartments. Yeah. But how could anybody walk up to their apartments and pass by the homeless people on the green, sitting down in the cold, in the rain like tonight? It doesn't bother them because they're going up into their nice apartment building. And what it is, it's all these buildings, it's easier for the cities in these big cities to just tear down these buildings rather than to funnel monies into refurbishing the buildings and trying to use the people in the community to run these places. I work for the shelter. We keep the overflow shelter. And there's a lot of people out there that are looking for jobs. We hear the government talking about 200,000 jobs open. But how many have we lost through outsourcing?
Oh, yeah, what I'm saying.
Who are these jobs for? Not for the little man. It's for somebody up there, the lawyers, the corporate people. The little man is losing jobs on a day-to-day basis.
Hey, you're just telling it exactly like it is. And by the way, that's one of the things I blame Clinton for pushing through NAFTA and GATT. Remember H. Ross Perot said that sucking sound will be our jobs going overseas?
That's right.
And he was right. Everybody laughed at him. He was completely right. He wasn't the only one who said it. Well, Janet, I thank you. You've been great. Not only have you said a lot of things are true, you've given me a chance to say some of the things I've been wanting to say. So
thank you, and I hope that you continue this effort on a year-to-year basis. Maybe someday somebody will hear the voice of the homeless.
Well, I hope they're hearing it tonight. Thank you very much, Janet. All right, let's go back to those phones. Those numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. David from Spokane, are you still there?
Yes. I printed 7,000 copies on the National Housing Trust Fund, and I'm getting them out in the inland northwest, like Spokane and Missoula. And we probably will have to elect some new congressmen to get it passed, but every Democrat in this state has a sponsor that bill. That bill would build or rehabilitate 1.5 million units of low-income housing if we pass it. But I'm a member of Americans for Democratic Action, and that's where I got the resolution. And we're used to campaigning and trying to change congressmen. So If people want to get involved in that, they can go to website and get that resolution and print a bunch. And if you live in the South or the Northwest, it'll benefit you in another way because building housing uses timber and so on, so it'll create more jobs in the South and the Northwest in another way, not only building low-income housing, but it'll create more demand for building materials, too. So if people want to work on that, go to our website or National Housing Trust Fund, Americans for Democratic Action, or National Housing Trust Fund, and get that resolution and print it out and get people aware, because I've been in the inner city and even in the suburbs, people are interested in that.
Okay, David, let me ask you a question. If the National Housing Trust Fund, which I support, is funded fully, every nickel that you're asking for, how much money is that?
Well, I don't know how much money it'll be because, I haven't studied it fully, but I guess the Senate passed something where the money coming Fannie Mae and Jenny Mae would go back into housing rather than that. But I don't know how much the total would be.
Okay, well, I want to make a point. And believe me, David, I support what you're saying.
Yeah, but if they want to go to our website, Americans for Democratic Action or National Low-Income Housing Coalition and
get... But David, I want you to listen to
resolution,
me. Okay.
And then pass it, make a bunch of copies and pass it out in the area and get people active and get their congressman to support it or elect a congressman who will support it.
I'm all for it. National Low Income Housing Coalition, Sheila Crowley, the president, she's been on this broadcast every year in one form or another. We support their work. But, in fact, I can tell you something that I've talked about with Sheila. if back in the Carter administration, at a peak, we were spending maybe $65 billion a year on housing and all the various kinds of programs. When Reagan came in and they started slashing that, it dropped precipitously to the point where it fell below $30 billion a year. It's below that now, as far as I know. So it was cut less than in half.
I know.
If we had kept at the Carter levels, we would have spent $500 to $600 billion, that's billion with a B, or more, just keeping at the levels we were already at. So when we talk about these programs, we have to understand one very fundamental fact. $600 or so billion dollars was taken out of low-income housing over the last 20 years, and all the programs on the table today put together to remedy that are not a drop in the bucket compared to what we lost that we once already had.
Well, people ought to get active and either get their congressman to change that or elect a congressman who will.
Well, it's all right. I support it, but people have to understand how badly we have been eviscerated in this country by these cuts. Why do we think there are people out on the streets? If you took $600 billion away from the Pentagon, they'd be complaining they were running out of ammo. Why does anybody surprise? David, I want to thank you very, very much for the call.
Well, get active and support the National Housing Trust Fund, and if your congressman don't support it, elect one who will.
I'm with you. Thank you very much. Those numbers are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. Steve from San Francisco, are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Steve.
Thank you. Well, a couple of comments. First of all, I think the basically poverty begins when you run out of money. And we've agreed to have a money system, but we forgot to make sure that everybody has some. That's like sitting down to play Monopoly without any of the 1,500 to start and no 200 going past go. And everybody ought to get some kind of a stipend to keep you in the game.
Right.
Let's say $50 a day. Well, that gets you one flop and one hot, maybe a Chinese lunch.
Yeah.
Not very much, but that's approximately something to get started. I'd say, oh no, how would they possibly fork over $50 a day? Well, it's like asking for the end of slavery before slavery had ended. That's the basic premise. And also there's sex and money are important in life, and how many classes in either one of those subjects did you get in school? And the physical part of the homelessness, I think, could be solved with trailers, you know, existing trailers that you could buy on the open
market.
Well,
there's a lot of solutions. The solutions are not actually that hard. It's the will to do it that's hard.
Well, that's right. Yeah, but you got to give them a way to go. If you've got to give them an idea.
Well, sure. There's a lot of things we can do. We can rehabilitate all of that abandoned housing, which is in the inventory of the federal government in many of the cities.
I don't know whether it's economical to do it,
right,
given what it takes to, with the oil running out and how much oil the cost of heating is going to go up. And
well,
so
whatever. The point is there are a lot of solutions out there. There's nobody out there in the government who's looking for them is the problem.
Well, they're government workers, and they're the fact that's a lot of the problem is the government itself, because not only I studied the welfare system back in the 70s, and I actually figured out what was wrong. It's in the bookkeeping system. It's called the 30 and a third rule. They thought they were writing a one-third incentive, but in fact they're writing a two-thirds tax to anybody who actually lived it and walked it on the ground.
Okay. Well, anyway, and, you're losing me. But what is the point of what you want to say?
Well, I'm just giving you some ideas here because
okay.
I've actually figured all this stuff out.
All right, so you're saying trailers. What else?
Well, trailers, you could do that in a low-rise building, say four stories high with retail on the bottom, and then park and just plug-ins. It's basically a vertical parking lot with plug-ins.
Okay.
That's one way. Those don't exist. But a campground, urban campground, basically. You know, people
okay.
have lived in tents for as long as people have been walking around, and there's nothing for tent people in an urban setting.
Right.
And so that would work, and cheap, inexpensive trailers or fancy ones, for that matter. But that's basically the score. There's a lot of people, and with more automation, we want the machines to do the work, so that means that there's people who are going to be out of a job. Not everybody's needed or wanted in the wheels of production, but still everybody has to have some money to play a positive role in the society.
Right, absolutely.
No green power, you can't do anything.
And we can't be planning a society where we're phasing people out of the ability to live.
Well, yeah, you don't want people dying on the streets.
Not because we got automation, now everybody's going to die. That's not making any sense.
No, but we want the machines to do the work, but we still got to have an income.
Well, you know, that's right, but you know,
got to have an income.
Those
money would come
things.
From the Federal Reserve Bank.
Okay.
So everybody would write direct to your account.
All right, Steve, you got one more idea you want to give us, and then I want to move on. So.
Oh, I got tons of them, but they take a little while to discuss.
All right, well, listen,
there you go.
I want to thank you because you've raised an important point, which is there are solutions out there.
Well, I know how to fix it. I've been working on this. I'm a specialist at being broke.
Well, all right. Listen, if George Bush calls me up and says, who knows how to fix it, I'm going to refer him to you, but I'm not really waiting for that call.
I don't know if I want to talk to George Bush.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
In the Tower of Testimony, we have... Who is it?
Jimmy again.
Okay, Jimmy, what's on your mind?
I've been listening to this for a few minutes now, and his solution to having tents... We shouldn't have to have tents because in 1992, we living in New Haven, I was born and raised here, and I'm not going nowhere. And in 97, they started tearing down Ashman Street.
Right.
Ashman Street was Ashman Street Projects. They housed at least 10,000 people. All right. Now, they tore them houses down, and once they tore them down, the people, they just started shifting the people. Now they're tearing down the rest of what we have as what we call low-income housing in New Haven. And we're shifting people in low-income housing to even lower-income houses, which is no housing. And that's a bad situation. We have to do something about that. First, they say that they're going to give us downtown, and they're going to... they're going to let some Section 8. I understand you can't have all Section 8 people down there, but they said that they were going to have some. But now with the rent that they're asking one person to move into something for $850.
I hear you.
And $850, how is a low-income housing person going to afford that? I'm on disability. I get $574 a month. Now, I also get subsidized. From the state, I also get state supplementary. State supplementary will pay me an extra maybe $200.
What do you get from the feds?
I get $574.
Okay, so you're getting a total of $7. Disability does not exactly pay rich.
It doesn't pay for rent.
The truly needy who are certified, inspected, detected, you have to go to doctors to get it and prove it, and it's not your doctor. They pick the doctor.
I done been through all that.
And at the end of all of that, they don't give you enough money to live.
No. Because I have been through all of that. I've been disabled for 15 years now because I was in a car accident. That's another story.
We're sorry
in itself.
About that, and we're sorry you're not giving you enough
We're
money
not going to worry about that part. What I'm saying is this. I can't afford to pay that. I was in the housing authority at one time, and I got evicted. I got evicted because my niece was getting evicted, so that's another story in itself. But what I'm saying is this. There's no low-income housing for a person like me because I don't have a credit history. I don't have, I owed it a back credit card of $500, so they tell me I can't move in there.
Well, listen, Jimmy, you bring up an important point, a philosophical point. If I may make just a brief philosophical dissertation based on what you've said. Because I have long pondered this question. Are bears in the woods mentally ill drug addicts? And I ask this question for a reason. When you cut down the habitat that bears live in so you can put up a housing project, and then the bears are rummaging through the garbage in the human habitation, everybody says, we know why that is. We've cut into their habitation and now they're in ours. But when you tear down all the low-income housing and you have human beings pawing through the garbage, nobody says, gee, we cut down their habitat. They say they must all be drug addicts.
Yeah. And see, the whole thing is, I'm not a drug addict.
Yeah, well, that's the point. I mean, if we only had the same rules for people as we do for bears, we'd understand a lot better.
If they keep saying that they're building all these houses, I don't see them. You know, I'm looking. I'm helping a couple of organizations out, and we're trying to figure out, what are they doing?
Yeah, yeah.
How can we get people that's in my situation out of it? How can we help a family that, okay, if you got a if you're a single parent, which most women in this town are, a single parent. Now, you're trying to work. You're struggling to work. You're making about $1,200 a month. That's on the average. I'm giving you a little more than you're getting.
Yeah, that's like a good average.
That's
actually,
that's high.
Yeah,
I'm giving you
working class,
you know,
people.
The top. All right. Now
I got to move on though, so let's wrap this up because I got a couple of calls I want to squeeze in.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're making $1,200 a month, your rent is going to be $800. How do you clothe and feed your children?
Listen, I'm with you, and I think the clear point that you're making, we have torn down a fortune and rebuilt a pittance, and that's why we've got this problem. And, Jimmy, I want to thank you very much.
Okay.
So I want to squeeze in a couple of calls real quick here. Jennifer from Bridgeport, Connecticut, are you there?
Yeah, explain clearly. It's pitiful that the landlord over here and that the director of the building named Marie Leclerc, I stay at Harrison Apartments. Okay, but I stay at the where I can't have no guests. I had to sign up to visit somebody else. I'm being discriminated to move somewhere else. They're going against my will, and they jerk me off my rent money, but in a way, because they're earning $42,000 for rent, and they're using all that for vacation. And I hear them talking about downstairs where I'm staying at. And they overlook my tail, folks like me, over DMR. And then again, they discriminate my tail for over DMH and DMR, Department of Mental Retardation, for me to work in. That's ridiculous.
Okay, Jennifer, I want to thank you for the call. Your phone is breaking up.
I want to get my number out, which is 1203-334-1985.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer. I wish your phone was a little better. Heather from Louisville, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's on your mind, Heather?
When I was 19, I became homeless due to a flood that ruined the apartment that I was living in.
How old are you now?
33.
Okay.
When I went to the city for assistance, because I was 19, I was not young enough to stay in the women and children's shelter. And because I didn't have children, I wasn't eligible to stay there anyway. So the only thing they could do for me was give me 2 free bus passes. And I had to survive by my wits for about 6 months until I was accepted into Spalding University here into the dormitory. And that saved my life. The assistance that they have for people is ridiculous. And the system itself, I have a friend who came down with multiple sclerosis and did not have health insurance, and her medication cost $1,500 a month. And in order to get money to pay for the medicine that she needs to survive, she has to live on public assistance, which totals only $8,000 for the entire year. Every month, she has to spend $100 of that money for a spend down in order to be eligible to get the medication, and she can't work or she won't be able to get the medication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they are paying her $8,000 a year to stay at home and not work when she could be out there working if she had the medication and paying taxes back into the system.
You know, we've had some great calls and great comments in this hour, and you've touched on another important point. And one thing I can't emphasize strongly enough, it doesn't have to be this way. If your friend was a citizen of Switzerland, for instance, she would have housing and she'd have her medical things paid for. Not every country feels it is a necessity to leave their citizens to just fend for themselves or to get this pittance. It doesn't have to be this way, and we're a richer country than a lot of the countries that treat their citizens better.
The whole thing is an oxymoron and doesn't make one bit of sense.
Well, there you go. It's hard to argue with that. And but you're housed now, right?
Yes, I am. It took me 9 years to get my degree, going to school part-time and paying my way through, but I've become a registered nurse, and I devote some of my time every month going down to the homeless shelter and helping out there, even though there wasn't one for me available when I needed it.
All right, Heather, I want to thank you very much for the call, and thank you for sharing that with us.
I hope you have the best of luck with your goals tonight.
Well, thank you. Well, our goal is to end homelessness. I don't think we're going to do that tonight, but I sure hope we can raise some awareness. And I want to thank you. By the way, for anybody who's out there, let me give you a quick little piece of math. If we gave an extra $500 a month kept every person on SSI, that's the blind, disabled, and destitute elderly. That would cost us $16 billion a year. And $16 billion a year, what that is that we're not giving that to them. That means somebody else is getting that $16 billion, and that they're getting that so that our people who are truly needy are left destitute. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating or affiliated radio stations. To view the webcast of this broadcast, order tapes, or contact Nobody after the show, go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org. It's all